This is Ahval Online, meeting point of accurate news and free comment on the current affairs of Turkey. Welcome to our podcast series. Hello and welcome to Turkish Current, a new series with Ahval News Online. And a constant guest in this series will be Associated Professor Ahmet Erdi Öztürk with London Metropolitan University. Erdi, welcome. Good to be with you.
Thank you so much, Yavuz, for having me.
So we are in this series focused mainly, among other things, of course, mainly on Islam, Turkey, region, religion, identity, ethnicity, all of these issues, which are focal point of international curiosity, because Turkey's story is very complicated. It is in crisis, and outcome is quite ambiguous, and it requires a thorough analysis. So we will return to these themes from time to time with you. Let's begin with the latest hot development, if you will. Mehmet Boynukalın was appointed as imam for Hagia Sophia, which last year was converted into a mosque from the status of museum, which is, of course, the monument is a of global cultural immense value. But it was Erdoğan's decision, and Boynukalın, quite outspoken, scholar with Marmara University formerly, was there, and he felt free to utter his views quite about almost everything, mainly on political issues. But hastily, most recently, he had to leave or was removed from his post as imam. And the decision was made, and he declared that he was returning to his scholarly duties in Marmara University. How do we read into this development? Because it was almost given that he would continue to conduct his work as imam of this, for Erdoğan, very, or for Islamists, very important building. How do we read into this?
I mean, this is not very surprising, actually. Turkey has been standing in a very unique position regarding to the separation between, quote-unquote, separation between religion and politics. I mean, even though the official constitutional article defined Turkey as a laic state, I'm insisting to use this as a Turkish, because this is not secularism, this is not French laicite, this is laic, and this is a very unique and a sui generis concept. It was added to the constitution in 1937, and this laiklik, this being a laic state, doesn't mean that there is a clean cut between state and religion, but instead there is a management of religion, as Ahmet Kuru, İştar Gözaydın, Hakan Yavuz, many scholars underline that. State has been a monopoly on Sunni Islam and wants to regulate, manage for its own benefits. And this was the conversion of Hagia Sophia from a mosque, from a museum to a mosque, is a symbolic understanding how Turkey still, I mean, the Turkish power camp, the current power camp, still insisting to use that management capacity. This is the one hand. The second hand is that how Turkey has been trying to change its state mentality, understanding of civilization, from a Western-oriented to an Eastern-oriented. Regarding this Hagia Sophia imam, Mehmet Boynukalın, this is not very surprising, because it shows that even under a very instrumentally used of Islam by state, the state can give you a symbolic role regarding representing the Islamic face of the state, you should have some limits. You can't be that outspoken, because state is the owner of you. You can't get in like a political dispute with some of the leading actors in Justice and Development Party. If you will do it, that the state, your boss, will take your chair under you, and you need to go back to your university. And I think this imam, this scholar, the theologue, found like that much position and the power in himself, and And he thought this is his position. No, this is the state position, and state gave to you and takes to you from you. This is so classical issue, and I think this is also a little bit of a cultural about the Anatolian people. They found the power is their core habitus, but it is not. The most powerful structure in Turkey is still state, even though it's a normatively very fragile, but still it is one of the more core focal points and the powers in the country structure. So this is such a normal act, and most probably they will appoint a very very blurby, very silent, not a very outspoken name to Hagia Sophia. But this is indeed one situation is quite crystal clear. Hagia Sophia will stay as a mosque, and it is the new symbols of the new Turkey.
So that's the critical momentum, isn't it? I mean, as written by Pinar Tremblay for Ahval News English in an article, in an analysis about Boynikalın affair, Hagia Sophia Imam affair, you seem to slightly disagree with her conclusions. She's concluding her article, and I read it here. She's asking some questions because she takes Boynikalın's outspokenness as important, because she describes sort of a growing gap between the ulema or religious figures, powerful imams. And she asks, she says, I'm reading here, Boynikalın has given conservatives, some of whom are members of influential religious orders, an opportunity to demonstrate their anger towards the AKP. Religious orders have found significant freedoms and benefits under AKP rule. Why shouldn't they now make more demands of the political establishment? What is the role of Islam What is the role of an imam if not to speak of Islamic values and principles? And she goes on, quote, here the issue gets particularly thorny, she writes. Public interest in Diyanet mosques, Diyanet being the Directorate of Religious Affairs, Diyanet mosques is decreasing while religious orders are thriving as the sheikhs can preach without inhibition. But the AKP does not seem interested in releasing Islam from the control of state institutions. As imam of the country's most prestigious mosque, Hagia Sophia now, Boynikalın held a mirror to AKP politicians' faces that they can no longer ignore. Political Islam can no longer be confined to the mosques. It must be managed more diligently.
Actually, I've been sharing the same ideas with Pınar. If you ask me to write an article regarding that issue, pretty much 70-75% of the article would be similar regarding the separation of religion and politics, how the Turkey state structure have been controlling the religious affairs and the imams. This is the one point. But the disagree point is regarding the definition of ulema, the definition of ummah, and the role of state and the current power camp within this structure. Having an ulema or not is a big discussion in the contemporary Turkish political history. And I am I'm the representative of the one camp regarding that issue. I saw that there is no ulema or there is no part of an umma in Turkey, because at the end of the day, Diyanet and it is all stuffed are the state apparatus. They are the transnational state apparatus. Likewise, the education minister, likewise, the military, or the postal service. State apparatus, it is directly organically belong to the state structure. So there is no independent ulema in here, in this structure. And it was like that, and it is like that right now. And during the Kemalist or the old Turkey, it was like that. But right now, the situation is slightly different. In Turkey, we have one head imam. He has been holding the same chair with the president, holding the same chair of the chairman of the Justice and Development Party. And he is the global Islamic face of Turkey. So there is no need or there is no necessity for any other vocal voices to give some fatwas or declarations or modern terms tweets regarding the religious issues or regarding the religious point of some of the disputable political critical junctions of Turkey, because Turkey has Erdogan who can eligible to occupy all of these chairs. So I'm not sharing the the same ideas with this very well written, beautifully and cleverly written article. This is only one slight difference that my ideas are quite different than her edge.
Let's talk a little bit about Diyanet, Erdogan's political discourses and the activities of Turkey originated Islamic groups and orders. What can we say now? Is there a real visible, tangible transformation of Turkey's raison d'etat under the AKP rule?
Yes and no. I mean, as we talk, like, Turkey has a unique understanding of laiklik, and what we know about the Justice and Development Party in 2002, AKP won a sizable proportion of the popular vote, and it was a kind of a promising political party, not only regarding to the Europeanization, not only the liberalization of the country, but at the same time, it was a hope for most of the liberals, most of the social democrats at the same time, and the public in front of the public opinion, they would normalize the relations between religion and politics. And indeed, Diyanet has been standing on the center of all of these issues. But Turkey, likewise many other countries all around the world, particularly after 2011, is gradually withdrawing from an international cooperation and restoring a new distinction between Western understanding of civilization by synthesizing a very subjective understanding of nationalism with a very problematic and a nostalgic vision of history, memory, and very personally reading of the Sunni Islam. Indeed, this transformation has been creating under the control of Recep Tayyip Erdogan, but he wasn't alone, and currently he is not alone. Currently, he is standing in an unofficial, unconventional coalition with Islamists, nationalists, with some parts of Eurasianists. It's still an ongoing process right now. And Turkey has been changing its, not state structure, but its state discourse and practices. And Diyanet has been transforming within all of these structures. And it is obvious that, I mean, in the Turkish case, the reconciliation of an instrumentalization of Sunni Islam and the instrumentalization of giant state apparatus, giant religious transnational state apparatus, Diyanet has been playing a huge role both at home and abroad. I wrote an academic article in 2016 in the Journal of Southeastern European and Black Sea Studies, and I define Diyanet's evolution as a protector of Sunni Islam and then promoter of Sunni Islam. Now it is protecting, promoting at the same time, but it, this was this promotion and this protection is quite banalistic and is quite in a combination in a coherence with the personalization of the state structure. And in this regard, I mean, when we look at the current Diyanet activities, controlling all the Sunni apparatus and very active, more than 77 countries all around the world, what we saw that there is a huge transformation in Turkey's mostly foreign policy activities, because previously Diyanet was very active in domestic politics. Still, it's very active. I mean, as I said, categorically, I'm rejecting that Diyanet has its own ideology, Diyanet has its own agenda. No, it has always been a state apparatus, and now it is a state apparatus and doing the same stuff in domestic politics. I mean, abolishing the Kurds and creating a negative propaganda about the non-wanted group like Alevis, non-Muslims, I mean, the atheists, so on and so forth, and declaring a very parallel discourse. I'm coming there because declaring very parallel discourses with the political outspoken persons, particularly with President Erdogan. For example, in that article, I found that whenever Erdogan or some of the leading AKP figures give some reactions regarding the LGBTs, regarding the gender equalities or the family values, in one day or in two, Diyanet declares something very parallel, something very similar, which with a source of the theological terminology and some information from Quran or the history of Islam. So this is a very eclectic structure with state. But the main transformation has been occurring in foreign policy. Now in foreign policy, I mean, what we saw that it operates, whether it is perceived instrumentally or as a fundamental object of the AKP's current foreign policy, Diyanet is one of the leading and the locomotive tools. Not only in the countries of the Turkish diaspora is quite popular or quite crowded, like Germany, or not only in the Balkans or Central Asia. Even today, Turkey's Diyanet is inactive in Cuba. The total Muslim population of Cuba is 0.01%, but still, Diyanet opened the masjid in the central street of Havana, and this is the largest mosque of the countries. So, and also Diyanet representative engaged activities with Turkey's other transnational Islamic communities. They were very good collaboration with the Gülen movement before 2013-2014. Now they are in collaboration with other Islamic communities, Islamic groups, Turkey originated Islamic groups. And Erdogan's position himself within all of this picture is a kind of a representative of the leader or the caliph of the global ummah. And this is the other side of the coin. Diyanet is not only representing Turkish ideas, representing the current Turkish governments or the state structures, policies all around the world, and also it is in a very strong rivalry positions with some other Muslim majority countries regarding who's going to be the leader of the global ummah. And Diyanet is in a competition, or as I said, rivalry, with Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Morocco, and Iran all around the world. And this gives another dimension to the Turkish foreign policy that we should say that the new Turkish foreign policy has, it is a one side, which is Islam. And within this Islam, official state's official hand, Diyanet, and unofficial apparatus, religious communities working together collaboratively, they are a kind of a long arm of the current Justice and Development Party's regime, but at the same time, they are independently very active outside the Turkish borders.
So you mentioned Saudi Arabia, Emirates, and parts of the Arab sphere, if you will, of the Islamic communities around the world. Is it a different kind of role compared to Asian, mainly predominantly Muslim countries, and also Balkans, for example? African, mainly Muslim African countries? How does it communicate with, or how does it cooperate, if you will, with the, you know, Arabic world, Arabic states?
Actually, there is not that much cooperation. Transnationalization of the Turkish Islam is
competition rather than cooperation.
Yes, definitely a competition, and I'm not using competition. Is if we define this struggle with the terms of competition, I may say that it is a little bit of a naive or a kind of a fluffy terminology. This is an exactly rivalry. I gave you the Cuba example a year ago. I wrote a report for Brookings Institute, and when I searched the Cuban mosques, Turkish mosques in Cuba, in Havana, via Google Maps, when you turn the camera around like 120 degree, you saw when our Saudi mosques, like one street, there is one Turkish mosque over here, and exactly the opposite side, there is a Saudi mosque. This is a great symbolic picture to show the level of the rivalry. And
you said mosques in Cuba, but there's only one mosque, right? Just one or more.
Yeah, no, one belongs to Turkish government, the other one is constructed by the Saudi Arabia. There's two. One is bigger than the Saudi Arabia one.
There are two.
Yeah, and they're. I can't remember the name of the street, but they're in the same street and looking at each other. I mean, always ready for fights. Yeah, very symbolic photo. And actually, I mean, the Saudi mosque is older than the Turkish one. or it's not a mosque size. It's like a masjid. But the Cuban administration suggested Erdogan to create one big mosque in Havana with a cooperation with the Saudi Arabia. But Turkish government rejected that idea and said that we are eligible and powerful to build our own mosques. This is also another symbol. I mean, what I was trying to say that the transnationalization of the Turkish Islam is date back around mid-1970s, and it is mostly based on invitation from the Western European countries, from the Balkan countries, and from the Turkey countries. Not the North Africa, not any other countries all around the world. And the main aim of this invitation is directly related with the Turkish laic identity and Turkish moderate Islam. For example, when I talk with the head advisor of the Bulgarian's first democratic president, Jalil Jalilov's first advisory, he told me that in 2017, we invited Turkey because we believe that only Turkish Islamic institution can serve our Muslims. And if Turkey will not eligible to serve our Muslims, Wahhabis and Salafis and other extremist groups will involve all of these serving Muslims issue, and they will disturb our social coherence. They will disturb our social structure, which is quite fragile. But now, when we look at the situation in 2020, they are quite hesitated to invite Turkey because they get rid of they one way or another, they try to fight with, they manage to fight with the extremist face of Islam, but they found in their laps to the political Islam. This is quite important. And the current Turkish regime is one of the vocal voice of this politicized Islam. And this brings us another factor regarding instrumentalization of Islam in Turkish foreign policy. I mean, Turkey has been changing its civilization understanding. And within this civilization, Islam has been standing in a very critical point. Today, Turkey has been trying to define itself as not an Islamic country, definitely, but a country which has contained a huge component, which is an Islam. And in this regard, Diyanet and other transnational Islamic communities is becoming a face of the new Turkey. I mean, before our conversation, I had the chance to listen your conversation with Professor Baskın Orhan, and he described how the current Turkish foreign affairs is kind of a humbled institution by the current Turkish state, and it is replaced by Diyanet and imams all around the world. In one of my articles was published in Religion and Politics, I compare the salaries between the ambassadors and the Turkish imams, and the gap is getting quite close to each other. And now the imams has been earned like ambassadors, foreign affairs staff, and also they have been a much more social power and normative power among the Muslim and Turkish diasporas all around the world, because right. They have much more organic and symbolic and ideological connections with the current Turkish state. So without considering Islam, without looking at the Islamic visions, and without looking at the big game, big religious game in the world, which is also regarding with the Arab uprisings outcomes and the Muslim Brotherhood's Turkey's relations, it is quite difficult for us to understand the current transformation of that big ship, namely Turkey.
I see. Great expose. Thank you, Associated Professor Erdi Öztürk, for this conversation. We will Thank certainly you. Continue from where we leave this one in the next episode of Turkish Current. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can follow Ahval News online podcast series through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. All you need to know about Turkey is here, for your ears, mind, and attention. Thank you for listening to our podcast.